How to do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Monday, December 30th, 2019, our next to last show of the decade. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have two of my favorite panelists to show up together. I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
I'm 90% turkey, 10% mince pies. It's nice to be back.
Excellent. I am glad you are with us. Also with me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi. Good morning, Charlotte.
Hi, John.
I'm glad both of you are here. And one of the things we're here to talk about is the last decade. We're going to wrap up. We had a link, Charlotte, from you to someone else's roundup of the stories of the decade.
Yeah, Aidmore published a really nice one hitting on some of the biggest stories of the decade. And kind of just struck me the number of things that have happened in the Apple ecosystem. Obviously, the tech world has expanded greatly in the last 10 years. But, you know, even for just one company in the form of Apple, it's been a dramatic 10 years. And it was interesting to kind of read back on other people's reflections of it, what happened. There was a couple that really struck me. Mm-hmm. And I know John will want to jump in as well. So April 2010, someone turned up to a bar with an iPhone 4 prototype, but they did not leave the bar with that prototype.
They did not.
Whoops.
And just to give you an idea of like the last decade, 2010 to 2019, it was early 2010.
Yes.
Was the iPhone 4 out in the wild.
Four.
So for people who remember when this happened, not the 4S, just the 4.
No.
Yes. It was the first blocky phone. It was the first one that had the 90 degree edges with the steel band around the edge.
It does have,
as opposed to the plastic back being sort of curvy.
Yeah. That was a very cool design.
It really
was.
Yes,
that's what the people that found it in the bar thought as well. And then they sold it to Gawker for $5,000.
Yes.
So that was cool. But yeah, I feel like that person at Apple didn't have a very good 2010.
No. I don't think so either.
No.
When I think back, with that being sort of the first story in this piece, over to Aidmore. Hi, Renee. It was Renee Ritchie's piece. One of the things...
No, it was Laurie Gill's piece, actually.
Oh, was it Laurie's? Oh, I thought it was Renee's.
But there's a very nice picture from Renee Ritchie.
Renee
the
has the video. That's why.
Yeah.
Hi, Laurie. Hi, Renee. So when I think back about what has happened since the iPhone 4, like even if you talk about the release, which was later that year... Just thinking back on how much stuff Apple has done since then in these 10 years is, to me, was sort of overwhelming, like, to think about. Because you know what else came out in 2010 was the iPad, which I would argue is a very, very big story. And like, all kind, you know, you're holding it wrong came from the last 10 years.
Yes, it did. AntennaGate.
Yes. AntennaGate.
Another thing that came out in the 2010s was Tim Cook. Did you see what I did there?
Yes. Very nice.
Thank you. Thank
well played,
you.
Madam.
But thank you. You're welcome. But yes, Tim Cook on October 30, 2014, wrote an essay for Bloomberg, which he confirmed what we all knew. He was an openly gay man. He said he never denied his sexuality, but he hadn't publicly acknowledged it either. He's talked fairly frequently about it since then when anyone has asked.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was a big moment to have the CEO of the world's biggest company say, I'm gay, I'm proud of it. He used the phrase, it's among the greatest gifts God has ever given me.
Yes.
I think is very, very powerful. And
indeed,
I think actually in the last decade, we've seen Apple take a much more firm stance on political and social issues. And I personally think some of that is based on Tim Cook's own personal experience. But even if it wasn't, to have this very, very senior figure in business and technology, you know, being open and proud of who he is, I think was a very, very powerful moment.
It definitely was. Yeah, go ahead, John.
Go ahead. I've got a favorite. Were we done?
Yeah, I was just going to say that I thought it was interesting the way he was very upfront about it and was like, sort of everyone I know already knows this. It's not like it's secret, but I never made a big deal about it. And we went from Apple is a very big company to Apple is a company where their employees march in pride parades. And Apple is a company that releases limited edition rainbow themed items during June, which is Pride Month. So coming out on the side of dreamers and talking to the administration regularly on different things, like we've seen a lot more from Apple on their not necessarily political but social sorts of causes. You know, most recently they said there's a lot of wildfires happening in Australia and we're going to find a way to help people there. And
so
I also think
the London Pride Parade this year, and if you look back there's a piece that I took from there with loads of pictures of all sorts of big tech companies marching with their company logos and so on in the Pride Parade in London this year. And I think it's almost undeniable that having that the CEO of the biggest tech company in the world talking openly about being gay made Silicon Valley kind of embrace that, like you say. And so I think it was across the board for both Apple and tech and society more widely, it was important.
Yeah.
Okay, Kelly, I've got one.
Yes.
One of my favorites is number 8 on Renee's list, the Apple Watch.
It's Lori's list.
We saw the iPad coming. It was even the slate in the original Star Trek series and then the smaller tablets that we saw in the Next Generation. We all wanted a tablet computer. We all saw it coming. There were attempts earlier than the iPad, but when we heard that Apple was going to do an iTablet type of computer, it was a very natural extension because...
Well, what we heard was really big iPhone.
Yeah, when Steve Jobs sat in that sofa and he sat back and relaxed and he just, touched the iPad with his fingers and talked about how you don't need a stylus because you lose it and the finger is the most natural thing to do. It all felt very expected and natural and evolutionary. But the watch, I don't think we saw coming.
No.
When the watch first came out, it was seen as sort of a fashion accessory. And we didn't even know where it was going to go. And now the watch has gone on to save lives to either through the ECG monitor or the fall detection or through the emergency calls system. Mm-hmm. The monitoring, the health, and the monitoring, the fitness, and all the things that this little Unix-based operating system does on your wrist is just amazing and is non-evolutionary. It's a quantum jump. And it particularly impresses me that Apple is the company that did this, and I praise them for it. And that's a big story. Underappreciated, I think.
I have one word for you.
I'm braced.
Fitbit.
Oh, hooey.
Well, I forgot how much fun it is to troll, John. So, I do agree with John to an extent that it was, a pretty dramatic thing because people had talked about, we kind of expected Apple to move into wearables, right? I don't think it's fair to say that was a total surprise.
No.
But... the way they did it, I think, was very Apple. Like, I'm sort of joking about Fitbit because, I've got one of the older Fitbits and it's a rubber band, basically, that goes on my wrist. It has 5 little LEDs and it bleeps when I get to 10K or whatever.
Yes.
10K steps. Apple totally revolutionized what wearables for fitness and other things were. For sure. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a totally fair one. And you notice with things like Fitbit, Samsung, other firms are copying Apple in terms of design now. Mm-hmm. So Apple was obviously not the first person to make a wearable computing device. It was clearly not the first person to make any kind of wearable pedometer. But in typical Apple fashion, it did, I think, it's fair to say, reinvent the kind of form factor.
Yeah. Well, and Apple wasn't always first with a lot of things. Like John mentioned, when we talked about the iPad, you know, they weren't the first wearable. They weren't the first tablet computing. They weren't the first smartphone maker. They weren't the first smart watch maker for all that. But the thing, one of the things that I think is notable about the watch is that the watch, like if you sort of ballpark it, you know, back of the envelope math, Steve Jobs didn't have a lot to do with the watch. If he did, it would have been in the very early stages of development because he passed away in 2011, which is one of the biggest stories. Not one of my favorites, I would say, but definitely one of the memorable things that happened. And part of the reason for me is because before I was a known associate of the Mac Observer, I used to do the show over at the unofficial Apple weblog. And part of that was I ended up getting a gig working with Mike Rose. Hi, Mike. And Dave Kalo. Hi, Dave. Over at doing a conference, a deployment for deploying a bunch of iPads to salespeople. So I was there as part of sort of the genius bar for when people had questions or couldn't get something set up properly. And we were there doing this and being part of this rollout. And we watched the iPhone 4 release event together, or the 4S release event together. And then like a day or two later, was when Steve passed away. And it was very odd for me because the whole reason I was there was because of this company, because of Apple Technology, because through Apple Technology, I found the unofficial Apple weblog and got a gig there. And then through that gig, I ended up being in Florida at a Disney World hotel, helping people with their iPads when all of this happened. And I was there with two people from Tua. And it was a very odd experience to be there. And the next day, all the flags at Disney were at half mast.
So there's a couple of things that stand out for me.
Because, of course, presumably Steve Jobs was on the Apple board at that, the Disney board at that point as well.
He was, yes.
Yeah. So, Kelly and Charlotte.
Yes.
One of the things that stood out for me about this was, of course, Steve's passing. KNX Radio called me and tried to get me to talk about it, and I just wasn't ready to do it at the time because it was a pretty emotional time. But there was a lot of nonsense about Jonathan Ive becoming the CEO of Apple, which he's totally unqualified to do. And even Scott Forstall's name was mentioned as
that's Sir Johnny to you, actually.
Yes. And the other thing that came out of this was the surprising success of Tim Cook. It was a very blurry time in October of 2011 when Steve died. There was a lot of uncertainty about what would become of Apple, whether the company could survive without this particular man at the helm.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim Cook, having worked at Apple for about 10 years before Steve Jobs died, was well experienced in the world of Apple, being the COO.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he was able to take the reins and turn Apple into the company that it is an important side story that,
mm-hmm. I don't think it's a side story, actually. I think you could legitimately make a case Tim's Cook's development into a highly successful CEO of Apple is the main story of the decade.
It led Apple out of the darkness.
Yeah.
Well, look,
because we saw what happened last time Steve wasn't in charge of Apple. And for a long time, Apple followers, you know what I'm talking about. It's for people who don't, it was not good. We'll just leave it there.
In fact, it was actively bad.
Old school Apple people called the dark times. there's a reason.
They who shall not be named. Scully, Spindler, and Emilio.
Yes. So, but watching that evolution like you said, Charlotte, is really interesting, and I think it's the biggest thing for Apple, because I feel like Steve coming back was sort of Apple 1.5, you know, not all the way to 2.0, and Tim Cook's iteration of Apple is 2.0. It's a first digit change. It's a fundamental iteration.
there's lots of things we could also add into this on the product side. You know, I would say that Apple's move to services, and particularly Apple TV Plus, is a huge story at the end of the decade. It may, you know, if we're all still, when we're in our retirement homes in 10 years' time, discussing this stuff, we may decide that that is the story of the decade. You know, the 2020s mm-hmm. is Apple in services. It'll be, you can be sure that I'll be watching how Apple TV Plus goes in the next 10 months and 10 years. So I think that's a very important moment for Apple to start rolling, you know, that it's Showtime event. Apple putting on a basically TV company event, mm-hmm. it was also a big moment.
Absolutely.
It's IDIC, infinite diversity and infinite combinations. There is no end to the future of Apple TV Plus.
There you go.
All time is available.
And that basically means John just wants infinite series of Dickinson.
That's really what it is. John wants infinite Dickinsons and infinite time to watch infinite Dickinsons. I don't know what the acronym is for that, but yeah.
Or the Mandalorian, whichever comes first.
Well, the Mandalorian's a different service. The thing I think about that one, Charlotte, is that we haven't seen the ripples yet of the Showtime event.
I totally agree.
Like, it will always be in retrospect, but I don't think we've really felt the impact of that yet because we don't have all the services out there. This is still sort of a warm up for all the streaming.
Totally
we talk about it here all the time, and we will talk about it more in the future.
I got to mention real quickly that I had a sour feeling about the morning show when it first started.
Oh,
the
I
first
know.
Episode kind of upset me because people were kind of whiny and emotional and backstabbing. I just didn't cotton to it very much.
Yes.
Excuse my southern accent. And as I've watched the show, inspired by you, Charlotte, as I've continued along the intrigue, the quality of the acting, the personalities of the people in the show is so brought to life by those actors, and the intrigue and the quality of the show just kind of got to me, and so now I became hooked. And I'm halfway through the 10th and final episode. I had to break off for something else.
I'm calling that.
I really
you win, Charlotte.
The morning show. I'm a fan of it now, and I'm ready to support it.
Yeah, you win,
I'm
Charlotte.
That is my biggest win in 2019.
It is.
Yes. Yes. For the win, Charlotte.
It is indeed.
Always.
I guarantee. I think, you know, and we've covered all of this. We'll have links to some of our sort of flashbacks in the show notes. I think, like, watching the decade of it and sort of marking that decade by stuff that was released, which sometimes is a better measure of time. Like, you know, 10 years ago, we were on the iPhone 4. Right. And 10 years ago,
which I paid $199 for.
Yeah. And there was no iPad. And, you know, like when you look at all these different things, one of the other things I thought was interesting on the list was legal, because Apple had the antitrust ebook case and Apple versus Samsung, which was a whole other thing that went on for most of the decade.
Many patent wars.
Yes, so much patent. And then, like, the whole patent troll thing, which affected a lot of people who were indie developers. You know, I think the rise of the App Store wasn't really until this decade. And we got the App Store in 2008. And I don't know that there was a whole lot there. And they certainly didn't give it the attention at media events like they do now and talk about the loads of money that people are making as developers on the App Store. And I think that's probably interesting. I think if you talk to...
Renee didn't mention, Kelly, we're not big, high-profile, theatrical, political events and technical events. One of the things I would have added to the list was the development of APFS and Catalyst. Those two items have changed the culture and nature of Apple.
I think Swift is one of the biggest.
Yeah, you could add that to the list. There's this core group of Swift, APFS, and Catalyst that have...
Yeah, the behind-the-scenes
really
stuff that have
Apple.
Made
yeah, yeah,
a lot
yeah.
of changes.
That's a story. That should be number 11.
Yeah, definitely the under-the-hood stuff, for sure.
I feel like... I mean, I know for a fact that we could... kind of all add our own stories and talk about lots of these, but I need your guys' advice on something.
I think we're going to wait on that until later in the week.
Oh,
I think we're
going to
go ahead and call it for today. But we will definitely be talking to Charlotte. Charlotte has a purchase decision that she's trying to make.
I do.
We are going to help her with it. I will give people a sneak peek, Charlotte, in that Charlotte was on at one point talking to us about possibly getting an iPad. And that possible purchase has become an impending purchase.
I saw it in the shop again, and it's very pretty.
It's so shiny and so pretty. So we're going to talk to Charlotte a little bit about her iPad and its resultant accessories later in the week. Now, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up, and I'm going to give people a brief housekeeping note. I did say this is the next to last show of 2019. That's correct. We'll be here tomorrow, but on New Year's Day, they will not be a program. So no show on Wednesday, but we'll have two more Thursday and Friday. That's when we'll talk to Charlotte about her iPad. But in the meantime, Charlotte, thank you so much for coming by and talking to us.
Happy New Year, people.
Yes, and Happy New Year to you as well. John, thank you so much for being here, and Happy New Year to you.
Sorry I can't convert 2020 to star date, but I'll have to say have a Happy New Year, everyone.
Well, I'll have you back on the second, and when I do, then you'll have 2021 for us in Stardate, yes?
I'll try to figure it out.
Stardate. I've never given John homework for TVO. This is going to be
23rd century or something like that, so we're in the minus Stardate.
That's okay. If anyone can figure it out, it's you. I have
faith. Bye, Charlotte.
Happy New Year, John.
I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow, not Wednesday. And in the meantime, be excellent to each other.